1340WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show, your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
Welcome to the program. Ed Marlowe, the Paducah Sun, joins me as he does almost every Wednesday, and a lot to talk about. Murray State football, we'll check out the OVC. We have district soccer going on and a few other things. But Ed, here we are once again talking about another good performance for Murray State as they go on the road and pick up a victory at Eastern Illinois. Again, looking good. There's two unbeaten teams in league playing the OVC, and the Racers happen to be one of them.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at what happened in Charleston, and I fully expected a shootout. I wasn't even remotely surprised that there were 1,300 total yards of offense. It just so happens that, really, if you take a look at how successful the Racers were offensively on Saturday, it was, in my opinion, three key defensive stops that really won the game for them. I mean, we can Rodney Castile, DJ Pinnick, you know, obviously, I don't want to say carried the team, but let's say carried the team. Let's for lack of a better description.
Behind the O-line, yeah.
The two of them plus that O-line running for, I think combined, they ran almost 300 yards.
Right.
They did. I think it was like 320 yards total between Castile and Pinnick. But you take a look at Cortez Roberts' interception in the first half to snatch away a sure touchdown.
Yeah.
And then you take a look at Kenny Wooten's two sacks. The first one, they ended up getting the 45-yard touchdown to what is his name?
Hollins.
Yeah, Alexander Hollins. Yeah, I'm glad you. Yeah.
He's the real deal.
He's the real deal. That 45-yard touchdown, you know, was the last true like breath of air for them.
Right.
And he beat double coverage. That was just a great throw. But that first sack set up that. That was 3rd and 15. But the 4th and 2 sack late when they were driving to score again and likely would have scored if they'd converted there. What a play. I mean, by Kenny Wooten. So there's a lot of positives you can take from this game. Giving up 640 offensive yards,
yes,
is not ideal,
no,
for this Racer defense. But to be fair, Eastern Illinois had put up that much yardage or close to it against everybody they played this year, even Arkansas.
Yeah.
So you knew coming in that offensively they had something going on. You just had to find a way to win. And the Racers did that, mostly, again, behind a rushing attack and an offensive line that provided incredible protection. The interception that Drew threw was even kind of strange because he stepped up in the pocket and could have taken off to gain a few yards, but tried to make a – I think he tried to throw it in the dirt, you know, knowing that he,
yeah,
had an incompletion, and they just plucked it off the turf for the interception and later scored on that drive. But, you know, the Racers answered, and – there were not enough words to describe what happened in that game, but I think saying the offensive line and two running backs salted the game is probably the best way to put it together.
Yeah, I would think so. Anderson also, his statistics aren't glowing. His touchdown to interception ratio, it's 1-1, and 5 touchdown passes, 5 interceptions, but he seems to be doing a terrific job managing the game, makes great decisions on what to do. His passes suddenly are finding the places they need to have. I just really like the way he's running the team, and I still think there's room for improvement for him.
Well, there's an incredible amount of balance. You take a look at the wide receivers on this team. You have, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers exactly, but you have at least 8 guys with 8 or more catches.
Yeah.
Like, it's that deep. Like, they've rotated guys in. They've, you know, created mismatches. You can tell that they have design plays for specific wide receiving readouts. You know, you bring out 4 or 5 different guys, they're running different routes, they're running different plays. You know, you can tell that some of these wide receiver bunches are schemed in specific ways. This time around, they got Corey Newble involved, you know, early and often, before going to, you know, Jensen Fagans and, you know, and 2 or 3 other guys that, you know, hadn't gotten a lot of reps in games before. You know, 2 games ago it was Malik Honeycutt, and before that it was Rajay Perkins, and before that was Daquan Dallas, and then Armani Hayes against Kentucky, and they've just done a really good job spreading the ball. You know, against Central Arkansas, it was James Sappington,
yeah,
3 for 81. You know, and they've had him rotate in. So it's, you know, there's a lot of balance coming out of this wide receiver core. I don't necessarily know if anybody's going to end the season with 40 or 50 catches, but you might have 6 or more guys in with 25. You know, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It's creating a lot of different defensive mix-ups, just to be honest. I mean, he's been able to find open wide receivers now for the last three games, and a lot of that is the offensive line's protection. Yeah. He has time to throw. Furthermore, I think an added element to his game that we've started to see more since the bye week is the option read. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, and Mitch talked a lot about that on Monday at the press conference about how they're giving him the play sheet to kind of just go out and play ball. So it's not like his runs are even ad hoc. He's just more comfortable making that play if it's there to take. And against Eastern Illinois, it was there to take. He had almost 80 yards rushing alone. He was a big reason. And they almost had three 100-yard rushers. Tack on Quarterman Sloan's near 50-yard game. And it was just a complete effort in that backfield, and a lot of thanks to that offensive line.
This week, the Racers go up against a Tennessee State team with another elite receiver, Chris Rowland, 26 catches, 415 yards, but that's only in three games. In terms of yardage per game, he's the leading receiver in FCS football. He has four touchdown catches, a little bit of a different body makeup than you had in Hollins, but they also have another kid named Treon Harris who has 20 catches, 285 yards, and a couple of touchdowns. Demry Croft has been up and down as the quarterback. Kind of got rattled last week against Austin Peay. Some turnovers, took two or three sacks, and kind of came unraveled there. But they've used Michael Hughes a little bit, too. Both of those are pretty accurate passers. But the problem with Tennessee State, they've been shooting themselves in the foot, fumbling it right and left. Without that, they're a pretty good team. But they're a very mistake-prone coming in.
Yeah, turnovers and, honestly, protection. You know, for as good as their offensive line is, their quarterbacks have been harassed a little bit. Now, to be fair, you know, they did play Vanderbilt. They're like the Racers, and they've played up a little bit.
Right.
They also haven't gotten into too much of a rhythm. If you think about it, Neil, you and I have talked about this over the last few weeks. They had a couple games, you know, canceled. So that really, you know, I'd say, in my opinion, they're probably a little bit behind the curve as far as game development is concerned. They just haven't seen as much live action as everybody else has. The Racers are going to be going into their sixth game this weekend. I believe they'll be going into their fourth. Is that right?
That's their fifth. They're 2-2.
They're two. Okay, so yeah. they're going into their fifth game. They're still. Did they lose two games or one?
They lost two games back to back because of one was Lightning. That was the one in Memphis. The other one was the Hurricane, so they didn't even go play that one. And then they still have a bye week coming up.
Yeah.
So the Racers have already had their bye week, so they're 2-2. They were hoping to fill that week, but man, in football, that's tough to do.
Yeah, it is really tough to find a game. But, you know, Rod Reed and his group, but they're not going to make that excuse. I mean, they played well against Vanderbilt, had a chance to win. They were leading going into the fourth quarter. And as Mitch Stewart always likes to describe them, they do look like the New York Jets. I mean, from a body perspective, you take a look at their offensive line, their defensive line, guy like Chris Rowland, you know, and their quarterback play, they look very, very poised and composed. And from all scouting indications, their offensive line is as good as advertised. So, you know, the Racers do a pretty good job creating havoc and pressure at the line of scrimmage. They've done a really good job in run defense. They did a solid job in run defense last week. Part of that was because they got to play ahead for most of the game. So, you know, teams have to abandon the run when they're behind. But, you know, I don't really know what to expect, taking it one game at a time. But I'd say the Racers are slightly favored in a game like this, perhaps being back at home. But if you win this game, I don't want to look too terribly far ahead, but if you win this game and perform well at Eastern Kentucky, homecoming looks a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more inviting than it did maybe at the beginning of the season.
Sure does. The rest of the schedule, Austin Peay at Southeast Missouri. Peay's in a spot. They can't afford to lose another game at 1-2. Even if they run the table, I'm not sure where they're going to stand in terms of any postseason hopes. But Southeast Missouri, they're definitely in the hunt, but they have to win this. Eastern Kentucky is at UT Martin, and both of those teams are 1-1, so it's must win for at least both of them.
Yeah.
And then Eastern Illinois is at Jacksonville State, and that one looks like, at least on paper, fairly lopsided. But EIU, they can score with anybody. Now, the key is how many Jacksonville State have put up with them. I just don't know if they can score enough points to beat Jacksonville State.
That's a great point. And that is completely fair to say about Eastern Illinois. They are absolutely can score with anyone. They have scored with anyone this year. Every team they've played, they've put up double-digit points. And if they haven't put up enough points, they've put up enough yards to look like it should have been points. So I think Eastern Illinois' what worst loss was what Indiana State. Did they get beat by Indiana State? I believe
I think
like
so.
41-10, but they put up a heck of a. I think it was 400-plus offensive yards in that game as well. I'll go back and check later, but it's, you know, this is an offense. I mean, Jacksonville State, I don't want to say it would be afraid of this game, certainly, coming
no,
in.
No, no.
But you know, it's an offense that can put up enough points, and last time I checked, 50-48, still a win if Eastern Illinois were somehow pull away with that. So,
well, it's a game where Jacksonville State, they can't afford mistakes. They haven't been making them, but three or four turnovers, and suddenly that turns into a game where they could lose it. But as long as they don't make mistakes, I can't see them doing that.
Yeah, you can't give Eastern Illinois extra possessions.
Right.
That's really, you know, what you just said. That makes complete sense. You cannot give Eastern Illinois extra possessions. And, you know, the Racers gave them two extra possessions, actually. They lost that fumble early, snap over Drew Anderson's head, and then the interception at midfield. They only scored on one of those. But, I mean, again, it was still a shootout. 48-41, 1,300 yards of offense.
Right.
That's just typical Eastern Illinois Murray State football. So
Mitch did say Monday night, I think the Preston Rice power package, that's done for the year. I think they're going to put that in the basket and put it on a shelf.
That was the other snap that wasn't
right.
So good.
It wasn't Preston's fault. He almost threw his way out of it, too.
Yeah, he did. I think, you know, they've tried it three times now, and it just hasn't worked. I'm not saying it's not going to work in the future, because it certainly will, and I know they rep it. It's not like they're going in there, it's like, let's see what we're going to do here. Like, I know it's not like, you know, like they're just trying to see if something works. Like they've been repping it. It works in practice, but the timing just isn't there, I think, you know, as of yet. You can kind of tell, and this is the New Orleans, you know, Saints fan in me, but the Saints have been using Taysom Hill in that same type of, let's get Drew off the field for a minute and put Taysom Hill, who can get to the edge and run. Preston can do that. And I look forward to seeing Preston do that when he, you know, becomes the starter for this team at some point in his career. But, you know, as of right now, you can tell, like, the synergy just isn't quite there yet. Whereas the New Orleans Saints, I mean, the synergy's there, you know. The Saints are awesome, and Taysom Hill's doing a great job running that option when they pull Drew off the field. He has a chance to hand it to Alvin Kamara or, you know, throw the ball or keep it himself. And I know that option's there for Preston on that play, but it just hasn't come to fruition yet. So it's really honestly led to a couple of tougher situations. Luckily, the Racers have actually scored in that possession later. I believe that was that the touchdown pass to Jonathan Moss?
I think so.
Yeah. And the next play on third down actually found Moss in the back of the end zone. It was a great throw, great play.
What the heck's going on? I have to listen to you talk about the Saints. Blake, he at least he's from Louisiana. That's all he does is rattle on about the Saints.
I'm just a Drew
Brees. I don't
Brees.
Hear anything else.
I'm a Drew Brees fan.
I like him. He's a good guy. But
you like him.
How does that happen?
He is the greatest to ever play the position.
You just turned into Blake Brunier right before my eyes. Let me rub him there a little bit. It's what he says all the time.
I am sorry. I like Tom Brady. He's a good quarterback. One of the best. Aaron Rodgers, good quarterback. One of the best. Peyton Manning, good quarterback. One of the best. Dan Marino, John Elway.
I just want to caution. I know what you're about to say.
Drew Brees is the GOAT.
It'll come back and bite you.
I don't care. Man. Let it bite me. That goat can bite me all day long. I'm fine with it.
All right. A little more Murray State stuff. Volleyball, tough start for them. But, man, have they turned it around. They're playing great right now.
They're playing great, and they're healthy. That's really the key. Rachel Holthouse is working her way back into the offense. She's back and returned. I think there's been a little bit of a come-to-Jesus moment after they started the season 0-3 in conference play, dug themselves in a hole. You have to think if they finish 500 or better from here on out, they're in the tournament. That's
sure.
The goal.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the goal was probably to win the league
that
you're hosting, and that's an unfortunate, you know, it's slightly discomforting to know that you started 0-3. It's not very often a team in the league starts 0-3 and still gets to host the tournament. Some other things are going to have to happen to help them along the way. But, excuse me, it does end up being a, I guess, a comforting feeling to know that they could turn around and get this ship back aligned. I think the real test will be is can they come away with a couple key road wins. A lot of this happened at home, and that's great. You want to take care of home. That's the most important thing with OVC play in any sport. But if they can come away with a couple of key road wins and really start to motor and then do as well as they usually do at home, then all of a sudden you're looking at a team that could finish, you know, with just three losses and win out 15 straight. Then all of a sudden you might be looking at hosting the OVC tournament. You never know. But to get back on track at least has got to be a settling feeling for this team, knowing that they're doing the right thing to get back. And you look at who Justino was nominated for a couple of national awards this past week. She's just an outstanding player. And again, most of this team is returning. I think that's the number one thing that, you know, Schwepke still has a chance to keep building this. I mean, you lose Dacia Brown when she graduates, but the rest of this team's back. So plus whoever he's got in the recruiting ranks. So it's, you know, as you continue to build this year, you're getting a glimpse at what next year could be like. And that's got to be a refreshing feeling for Coach Schwepke and his staff.
Royster Soccer, they hit the road. UT Martin, the road hit back. Pretty physical game. They were out physical from every account that I've heard. But they get back home this week with a chance to get back on the right track.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think UT Martin might have surprised them a little bit. From a couple people that were at the game told me that the midfield, that there is a you know, the Racers are a little bit unhealthy at the midfield position, and once they return to that health, they think everything will be back in full cylinders. But UT Martin, apparently, in the first 15 to 20 minutes, just got really, you know, really uncomfortable. Made things really, really tough in the midfield. You know, got a little bit of an edge there, got some possession, and were able to stick away a couple of goals, you know. And the Racers got one back real quick in the second half, and then just late, you know, UT Martin, you're pushing, and you give up the back end, and there's your 3-1, you know, loss. And so I think the Racers are probably I don't want to say that UT Martin has clinched yet, because it's way too early. You still have, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of play left. About the end of October is when regular season play finishes. But that's a huge win for UT Martin, you know, and if they can continue to do what they're doing, they'll likely host. So that could be the wake-up call that the Racers need. You know, get everything together, get everything sorted out, get healthy, and go win an OVC championship in Martin. But a lot of soccer still has to be played, and it does start this weekend.
And speaking of soccer, district soccer going on, you've been covering some of that. Give me a kind of a thumbnail on what you expect to see from a championship standpoint, District 1 and District 2.
Well, tonight, pending weather, tonight's games are going to be absolutely excellent. I've been covering second district soccer. I firmly believe that a second district team will be the champion in both boys and girls. That's no disrespect to McCracken County. Both of their programs have done a fine job this season, but just the amount of competition that the second district has provided, as it usually does, it's usually just an absolute war to even make those district championships. And last night, Murray and Graves girls were tied 3-3 at the half before Graves came away with a couple of goals and in the second half, a couple of freshmen, and Anna Whitaker, and I'm trying to think who. Anyways, Anna Whitaker, and they're super talented. Ellie Carter, that's the other freshman, a couple freshman forwards, and that's because Murray played great defense on Rachel Mathis and Madeline Bird, but Graves has, you know, a lot of different weapons that they can use to attack the net. So from a boys perspective, Marshall is back in the first region field for the first time since 2014. You know, and that's the longest stretch in Marshall County history. They've only missed the first region tournament 5 times total, 3 of them coming in the last 3 years. So for them to get over the hump this past, you know, last night against Mayfield, and really, really just, they got over the hump because they played so well in the regular season. You know, they earned the number one seed, so they had to. That in comes the whoever's the lowest remaining seed, you know, coming into the semifinal round. So they earned that right. After Murray got upset by Mayfield in double, you know, in penalty shootout, 3-2, 5-4, it ended up being, you know, Marshall really couldn't take its foot off the gas. That was a Murray team that had beaten Marshall twice in the regular season, and Mayfield had topped them. So, you know, they couldn't fall asleep last night, and they certainly didn't. You know, three goals in the first half and then two more in the first 2 minutes after halftime put that game away and really, really motored into a semifinal appearance, which should be, you know, I don't know. You know, now they're in the championship. Now they're in that hunt, and they haven't been in that hunt for so long. They don't necessarily know what that's like. So they're still hungry and still thirsty. But it'll be really interesting to see how it all shakes out.
Yes, it will. But we digress. Let's check out volleyball just because we must. Speaking of staying hungry and thirsty, how does McCracken County's volleyball team stay hungry and thirsty? Because there's dominating, and then there's whatever the word is that they do. They just never lose. They never even come close to losing, Ed.
No, they really don't. But the one thing that I will say, I think something that keeps them hungry is the fact that everybody else in the region is always chomping at them.
Yeah.
You got to give Tillman a lot of credit from last night. We had one of our stringers, Bennett Boyd, was there. And, you know, the last set, you know, was tied, I think, three or four times before, you know, McCracken was able to come away with about a 3-4 point win in that final set for the sweep. But, you know, it's a young Tillman team under Carl Elise. Led by Destiny Thomas, a couple of big hitters in the middle, and Destiny's just an eighth grader. So, you know, they've got a lot of talent at Tillman. Is it enough to beat McCracken? Not yet.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's one thing that keeps McCracken hungry, at least now, is that teams like Marshall, CFS, CCA, you know, even Ballard Memorial, a couple of times Graves County, these are all volleyball teams that have improved over the last 4 or 5 years, and a lot of it's because, and I said this a lot about when McCracken got beat in softball, when you get beat so many times by a specific team, you start gearing to beat that team. You start prepping. You practice a little bit more. You work out more in the fall. You work out more in the spring, and you get ready to face that. I think it's the old adage that iron sharpens iron. There's a lot of teams that want to beat McCracken. They want to be the first team to take a set from McCracken. That alone is a goal for a lot of teams. Like, let's take a set. Let's put it back on them to come back and win. Nobody's even taken a set against McCracken in the first region since they consolidated. So that's a testament of iron will to McCracken, but at some point it'll end. That's just mathematics.
Oh, well, of
that's,
course, yeah.
At some point, there will come a time that a volleyball program has the weapons, and has the assets and the skill set to take a set or even win a game, you know, against McCracken County. It just hasn't happened yet. I think that's what keeps McCracken hungry, is knowing that they have that edge against the first region, and have had that edge for a long time now.
A little more on college football before I let you go. Sports-wise, Kentucky losing to Texas A&M. It went to overtime. I don't think I saw all sorts of online stuff. I think my grandson even told me they never gave Benny Snell the ball. So, like, well, at the end there. So, anyway, Kentucky has a week off and still has a special season potentially ahead of them. They do have the Georgia game. This could still turn out to be a 10-2 year for them despite that.
Oh, I think it very well could. And honestly, you take a look at the Texas A&M game, I think two things really stood out. I think questionable play calling in the overtime. I think it's no disrespect to Eddie Grant or Stoops or anything like that. There's a lot of frustration there. This bye week probably couldn't have come at a better time for them to just kind of regroup and take a look back and say, oh, well, we did some great things in this first 6 weeks. Some great things. You're 5-1 when really you could have just easily been 2-3. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly a boon for the program. Two, I really, and again, Terry Wilson I think is an outstanding athlete, but I think one of the big problems against Texas A&M that Kentucky had, they never really could find the big play downfield. Now, I'm not criticizing anybody's ability to throw the ball. Wilson's got a cannon for an arm, but they really weren't able to hit on a lot of big shots like that. They bottled Benny up a little bit. Texas A&M's defense is really good. Furthermore, Texas A&M was a 6-point favorite, so yeah. I picked Kentucky to win based on momentum when really Vegas had them losing by six. Yeah. Vegas kind of knows what they're doing.
They do.
20-14's yeah. A 6-point line, so it's pretty spot on to what happened. But I think, you know, when your longest play of the game is the Lynn Bowden touchdown that was really a shuttle pass on a flip to Bowden in the backfield, I don't want to call that gadget offense because I do like that play. I think that's a really good play when you have athletes that you can get in space. But it's just not ideal to win championships. It's not a, you're not going to beat a Georgia doing that. You've got to be able to find a deep play or two or a home run play. And I think, you know, honestly, they were looking for a home run play out of Benny Snell in overtime, and they never drew it up.
Yeah.
They never came to – they never I completely agree. This goes right up there with, like, throwing on, like, the goal line when you have Marshawn Lynch, you know, in the Super Bowl, you know, if you're Seattle. Like, what are you doing? You threw it right to Malcolm Butler. And that's no disrespect to Russell Wilson. He's a great quarterback. Made a great read. His receiver had the slant. Butler made a great play. It's no different than what happened with this whole Kentucky thing, you know. You see a couple people have analyzed the play already. Conrad was open for a wide-open touchdown, 25 yards, if Terry Wilson had gotten rid of the ball quicker off of that flip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that that's probably what you were drawing up. You wanted that touchdown. But you need 6 feet, and Benny Snell is 6 foot tall. Like, you just need him to lean for a first down, and he likely gets a touchdown there. He's that kind of a guy. I'm also of the notion, you may not be, but if you have the best player on your team not in that position to take that shot, take that play, you're left wondering, well, what could have been? Well, yeah. It could have been Benny. You know, it could have been. And what if he, and if he gets stuffed?
Then with my best player.
Yeah.
I'm all right losing that way.
Yeah, you lost that way knowing that Texas A&M game planned for it. They were ready for it. Benny was ready for it. Everybody was ready for it, and it didn't happen. You know? You know, at that point, you know, it's no different than a last-second shot in a basketball game. How many times last year did we know Jonathan Stark was going to get the ball, and he got the ball, and he made the shot anyway?
Yeah.
Or Terrell Miller was going to get the ball, and he got the ball, and he made the shot anyway. Or John Morant got the ball and made the shot anyway. That's what happens in sports. You have to be able to put your top guy in that situation. You know, Benny makes that conversion. His conversation in the Heisman Trophy continues to rise,
yeah.
Whereas now it's kind of like at a – I don't want to say it's stagnant, but being in an off week, there's not really going to be a lot of conversation with Benny Snell in the Heisman right now.
Right.
It's Kyler Murray. It's, you know, it's Tua Tagovailoa. It's a lot of different guys. So, I don't know. You can second-guess it all day long. They have this week to figure out and talk about, hey, listen, we ever get in this tight situation again, we're going to Benny.
And – I mean, put it in basketball terms. Matt McMahon, Jonathan Stark, game-winning shot. You let him take it. You don't ever have to defend that.
No!
If he hits it,
you say Jonathan
we
Stark,
won.
He was a 44% three-point shooter.
Why'd you let him shoot it? Here's the stat sheet. You tell me.
Yeah, he's the best shooter in the country in that position,
there
in that
go.
Shot.
Yeah.
He is a clutch shooter. That's all Matt would have to say. You know, he's you know, there's no – we got beat. Whereas – now, all of a sudden, you look at the Texas A&M UK game and you're like, well, maybe we beat ourselves.
Maybe. And they may not
and
have won.
Don't ever have to say, and yeah, they could have stuffed Benny.
He may have fumbled.
Yeah.
He may have.
Yeah.
But I'd like to know.
But we don't know.
That's right.
You're right. We don't know.
If you're a Kentucky fan, anyway, I think you at least want to know the answer to that. All right. Enough sports before I let you go. I think, from what I understand, I'm going to see Venom Sunday. Mixed reviews. You heard anything about it? Have you seen it yet?
I have read some of the reviews, and I honestly, I don't know. I really do still want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I really haven't read that much about it. I'm excited about it, but I've just been so busy with work that I've not had a chance to go to the theater and see it. I have read a couple of reviews. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I think that's kind of the concern there, is that it's not really a united front on what type of a movie it'll be. I plan on going to see it and First Man, though, fairly soon when I get a free moment. I really want to see Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong. So, but that's, I wish I knew more about it, but I'm like you, I have seen some conflicting reviews. Some people, again, that are heralding it as one of the better, you know, movie cinema, you know, part of the MCU, which it's technically, it's MCU, but it's weird because, like, Venom's a bad guy, and it's weird. But I like Tom Hardy, so I'm anticipating enjoying it. But I'll let you know as soon as I see it.
All right. Well, the wife, she saw A Star Is Born, which this past week, she knew I didn't want to go see that. So
sure.
I guess it's my turn this week, but that would have scared me to go see that and have to. But she talked, Bradley Cooper?
Yeah.
Talked about how great he was as a singer and then played a clip of it. And my wife, love her as much as I do, not the best at judging singing. So I'm not. But anyhow, she loved the movie.
Well, I've actually, I know it's a remake.
Yeah.
But I've heard nothing but great things.
That's all I've heard.
And I've heard some samples from, you know, Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper. And
now she can sing.
Yeah, absolutely.
I may have told you the story about flipping channels one night. You know, all I know of Lady Gaga is the videos and stuff I've seen. And it's like, here's Lady Gaga with Tony Bennett. It's like, oh, dear, this will be horrible. And she sang, and it was just, couldn't believe it. It's like, you don't need the gimmickry, young lady. All you got to do is open your mouth. You're an unbelievable singer.
She is an unbelievable singer.
She's one of the best I've ever heard.
She can sing whatever she wants.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing.
She's awesome. All right, Ed, I know you have plans, so I'll let you take care of it. Next week, we'll be back and do another show.
Sounds good.
And talk some basketball next week.
Oh, that's right. We have RacerMania next week.
So we'll have that coming up next week. We'll see you tomorrow.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.